medical community proudly presents the JDE Connection, a Quest on-air podcast production.
This podcast explores and showcases how JDE customers are harnessing specific functionality and capabilities to drive business success.
Hello, JDE Connection listeners. Welcome back. This is Chandra Wabshaw, one of your podcast hosts, and I'm the manager of business applications at Brightview Landscapes. With me this week and every week is my friend and podcast partner, Paul Houtcooper, Vice President of JD Edwards Product Development at Oracle. Hey, Paul, how are you? It's almost 4th of July.
Almost. Doing pretty well. So we released our Q3 offering earlier this week. So if people didn't see it, go out to Learn JDE and you'll see the June drop of release 25. Got some cool things out there for enterprise automation. We now have an application that allows you to define your own processes. So there may be things in the system, the way in which you run your business, that isn't necessarily inherently defined in how we delivered the system. It allows you to map stuff out yourself. We also delivered another round of sustainability for application capability. So you can capture and store purchased energy now, which is pretty neat. And then drumroll, we have AJ's favorite feature, the one that he's been trying to get done for decades now, because the 1980s called and wants their PPAP messages back. But anyway, we have rich text formatting on our workflow messages. So that has now hit the streets. So that's just a couple examples of what we shipped on Monday this week. Again, if people are interested and want to know what's in it, go check out learningjde.com.
I'll be heading over there. I got to get all the details.
Well, what's going on with you this week?
Well, Paul, it's been a week. Work's been, you know, the normal amount of crazy, as work always is. But outside of work, I'm having some work done on my house that got kicked off this week. And let's just say a little public service announcement. When you go to buy a house, make sure you go check all the permits that were pulled on your house, because you may end up with an unexpected surprise when you go to have some work done in the future. So, you know, depending on whatever the statute of limitations is in your state, you may or may not be able to go back after previous homeowners for non-disclosing work that maybe wasn't permitted.
That
so
doesn't sound like fun.
No, that really wipes out the contingency tenfold or so in order to fix said issue. So
surprise, and not the good kind.
Not the good kind. No. So that about sums up my week in a nutshell.
You know, and sometimes you're just trying to do the needful, right? Just trying to do the right thing. And yeah, seems like it costs you even more. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. So I know we were talking a little bit offline and we're not going to go into much detail, but I'm sorry. That sucks.
Yeah.
But hey, like you said, public service announcement, you never know what you're going to learn on the JDE Connection. So we're here to help you not only with JD Edwards, but even with your home buying experiences and, you know, things to double check. Always look at the property, go to the county or city records and find out what permits were pulled and see what work was done. And if you see work done and you don't see the corresponding permit, you probably want to ask questions. You know,
that is
something you want to do before you're under contract. No comment. No reason I'm bringing that up. I guess we'll just move forward.
Sounds good. Well, speaking of moving forward, let's move forward and let's talk about UDO security. So I know it's going to be really exciting. So in episodes 60, 63, and 66, we did cover the security workbench, what we explicitly said we weren't going to cover UDO security. And I just decided that it's a good segue into it, coming straight out of the security workbench. But before we get into UDO security, could you maybe give me a little education on something? What exactly is a UDO? I know it's a user-defined object. I know it's a CAFE 1. It's a form extension. But How is it different than any other object in JD Edwards?
You don't like the definition that we put out there? I mean, it's a web object, Chandra. Duh. And you can create said web object from a web interface. Ooh. Doesn't that do enough to explain it?
Apparently, I'm not intelligent enough. I don't know.
No, for the folks that wrote that, I'm sure it makes perfectly good sense. Ultimately, I'm not so sure that I want to try to explain whatever that is or whatnot. To your point, it is user-defined objects. And what are they? I can explain it the way I look at them and understand them. I don't know if people want a more technical explanation, they'll have to ask the folks that wrote that line that says create web objects via web interface, I guess. But for me, when I think about user-defined objects, they're just objects rather than codes, right? We have user-defined codes. Why did we do that? It was a way to allow customers the ability to configure, tweak, tailor, whatever word you want to use.
Personalize
the system to align with their business, right? So you have specific codes, you have specific terminology you want to use. User-defined codes allows you to do that. Similarly, we shipped a platform, right? We allow you to go into Form Design Aid or Report Design Aid or, you know, whatever design kit we ship to build your own or modify, customize, clone, do those things. But we understand that each time you do those things, you're creating a bunch of technical debt, right? So we gave you that flexibility. That's awesome, but it translates to technical debt, which impacts you on upgrades. So then we thought, you know, if we can do user-defined codes, why couldn't we do user-defined objects? Why couldn't we come up with a way of saving, you know, for lack of a better word, metadata, right? Saving information about how to render a form, information about how to arrange a grid, information about a pane within an application, you know, that why couldn't we save that separately and allow users to define those things to tailor their user experience and not have it impact the actual base product, right? In the sense that it doesn't translate to a customization or a modification of the, again, technical terms, the specs of said application that you're using this on. So again, user-defined codes, user-defined objects, same sort of concept, lets you obviously tailor it to meet your needs and without fear that we're going to overlay it or displace it or whatever the next time you take the latest and greatest that we deliver. So that's the way I look at it. And then of course, all we've been doing is adding to that. So, you know, it kind of started is probably before, just before we did UX one and, you know, you add Cafe one page, you had E1 pages. We then started looking at form personalization. Couldn't you just, you know, why not be able to manipulate a form? Just, you know, you've got the form sitting there. Why not just allow me to rearrange the form and, you know, remove, hide, show, you know, whatever things to make it work for me and then just save that as a personalization? That spawned a whole other thought on, you know, another set of UDOs because that went from form personalization to form extension. Right to, okay, if I can extend the form, the next thing I'm going to want to do is logically extend the form. So now I've got logic extensions, right? And yep. Whatnot. So you can see how this just starts to cascade. Where can we give you the ability to define your own set of column requirements, if you will, that follow alongside the base application? And when we merge them together, that's the experience that you have. So,
well, thank you. I appreciate the explanation. I don't know if anybody else has wondered that same thing out there. I'm not a programmer, you know. How is this object different than that object? I don't understand. Random thoughts that pop into my head on a run sometimes.
Oh, sure. Of course. and you know, I apologize. But I mean, the whole web object thing, I think what that's really trying to refer to is the fact that you can create these UDOs, whether it's a grid format, a watch list, a query, a cafe one, you know, we got 20 of these things now and they don't require like a package build and a deployment,
yep,
so to speak, in order for them to be evident and then, you know, used in a particular environment, right? It follows its own life cycle. It's a separate life cycle. It's a quicker life cycle. It's much more convenient. But, you know, to be fair, it is a separate life cycle and it doesn't have all the checks and balances, or at least initially, maybe it didn't. Now, of course, it does. I mean, we've put another set of change control around this life cycle to make sure it has all the checks and balances. So you're not just randomly creating things and changing production, right? But it is a separate cycle, to be fair, from your standard spec-based application or whatnot. So I think, you know, the reference to web apps is basically saying, look, these aren't spec-based applications. They can be, you know, published versus built and deployed, right? They can be published and shared, and they don't have to be built and deployed. So, and most of them, well, all of them really are things that you can do on the glass, which means you're not going into some design aid in order to create them. Instead, you're actually within the application, clicking a button, exposing a set of query. You know, you can set up your advanced query, or you're clicking a button and it's opening up the form in a way that allows you to manipulate and move things on the glass and then save that. And that doesn't have to then later get built and deployed to get to PY or PD or wherever it is that you want to promote it to. So hence the different terminology. So I guess in the end, I end up trying to explain that in some way, shape, or form. So sorry.
All good. Thank you. Much appreciated. Uh-huh. And if people did miss it, we did do two episodes on UDOs, episode 45 and 46. So we cover all of them in that episode. Well, there might be new ones since we did that one. So, but it's a good place to go back and listen to the various UDOs. And for us, most of the ones aside from some of the, like the grid formats, if you're creating a CAFE one, we absolutely do make it go through the entire life cycle. But we, as business analysts, do have the ability to move them between DV and PY, unlike other objects where I can't do the build. I don't have those privileges. My CNC team has to do that. So for us, it definitely allows for me to move things through the system faster. I still can't do them in production. I can't promote them to production. That has to be done by CNC. That is part of our controls that we have in place.
Yeah,
so
your segregation of duties and whatnot. You know, again, it's all about managing risk, but
yes,
it's nice that you have all these different ways for what we had termed at the time the citizen developer. So we thought of BAs and power users as wanting to turn them into citizen developers. So they don't have to know Java and they don't have to know, you know, how to develop C code or RER or anything like that to be able to actually make changes and improve an application the way they need to improve it, right? So I don't know, low code, no code, right? Programming, same sort of thing, right?
Yep.
With our logic extensions and stuff like that, you've got some pretty straightforward Boolean logic that you can leverage to create new conditions and whatnot, new evaluations, but you know, nothing over the top. So
absolutely. In Focus 2025 is coming and you're invited to the JD Edwards event of the year. Join the JDE community, Oracle product teams, and industry experts in Denver, Colorado, Tuesday, September 9th through Thursday, September 11th, for three powerful days of learning, networking, and innovation. Save extra when you register a group of four or more. Dive deep into key topics like Release 25 and 26, Orchestrator, AI, Automation, UX1, and more, all designed to help you get the most from your JD Edwards investment. Visit questoraclecommunity.org/infocus to learn more and register. That's questoraclecommunity.org/infocus. We hope to see you in Denver.
So when you wanted to go through this, I'm like, okay, wonderful, UDO management. You'll do most of the talking. So since I've done most, I'm just kidding. But because this isn't my cup of tea, right? This isn't my area of expertise. And it is different. Like when I was a developer, OMW was it. That's all I used, right? Web OMW didn't exist. And UDO's weren't even a glint in whoever's eye it happened to be that came up with the idea. So, you know, this is all new to me. And I hear discussions around it, and sometimes, you know, not always in a positive manner. So it's kind of interesting to me to go through this with you, because I want to learn, like, okay, walk me through, if I want to use one of these UDAs, doesn't matter what it is. Let's say it's a, you know, your favorite cafe one. All right. What's the life cycle like? What are the steps that you would have to go through in order to basically make it available to me? And they, you know, give me authority, you know, those sorts of things. And then what's the life cycle of that we have to follow here? So let's, first of all, I want to do a cafe one. So what's the first thing that you would have to do?
Well, we have to enable that feature for you. So by default, when you, you know, install your latest and greatest version, if you're not using any of these UDOs currently, you have to enable the feature security. So to do that through the security workbench under the form menu, there is a feature security form exit that you navigate to. And when you do, it opens up with all of the UDOs that are in your current application release, depending on what you're running.
And this is you preemptively reminding me that because you're so far behind, you don't have all 25 of these things listed.
Maybe.
Just kidding. So you've got 21. All right. Well, that's not too bad.
We're at least in the 20s. I mean, that's a good sign, right? So as you can see, for those that can't see, because we don't share screens on our actual podcast, we're not doing video yet. In my environment, we do have 21 of them available. We have one not turned on. All the rest of them are turned on. And to do that, you basically in this screen would, under the access column, there's what's probably a red box. You would click on it and it would change it to a green circle, which would enable that UDO for you.
Right. So you click the radio button or you click the toggle, whatever you want to call it.
Whatever you want to call it.
And enable it. So that enables the feature. So we delivered new capability and we didn't enable it out of the box. That's probably pretty good. I'm sure the CNCs of the world are happy that, you know, they didn't update to the latest release and all of a sudden all their users have access to this new icon up in the whatever corner.
Top right.
You know, they're all clicking it going, what does this do? What does this do? Right?
Users do that never.
Or wait, I click on it and it doesn't do anything. But why doesn't it do anything? Well, because maybe they don't have authority to use it. Right? So now you've turned the feature on. So I still can't use it though, correct?
No, you can't. Sorry. Probably not. I shouldn't necessarily say that. It all depends how you have your security configured in your current environment. But that being said, yes, you do need security for your UDOs. So there's a couple types of what I would call action security, which is a little different than the action security we covered earlier. So to get to this, you're going to go to your form menu, then to your user-defined object, and then your action security. And this is where you can see who has the ability to create, publish, or modify, or maybe you just have create, or maybe you just have create and publish, or maybe you have create, publish, and modify, all of the above. So
this is where you would go to give somebody that. In your case, correct. If, you know, with it all being set up, this is where you go to view it. But if you wanted to give me Cafe One access, you would go here.
Click the little plus button.
And you would add a row for Cafe One for me or my role.
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Since we do everything by role, it would be by role. But yes, see, once you click the add button, the menu that opens allows you to select the object type or if you want to do a specific application or if you just want to do all. So maybe you do want to have Cafe One availability for a specific power user role. Maybe they're purchasing. Maybe you have a purchasing power user. So maybe you would give them application security to create a Cafe One in PO entry for whatever reason, you know. So maybe you'll do something like that. So you can get a little bit granular here. Sure. We do tend to keep ours a little bit more, I don't know, a little less granular maybe would be the word for it, because it's role based and we give it the object level and it's all applications for people like me.
just because we like to be confusing in E1 sometimes. You've enabled this feature, but when you go in to give somebody create, publish, or modify control, it suddenly that feature becomes the object type. So I just, what confused me there for a second is you said you do it by object. Now I'm like, oh, so you do it by P4210 or you do it by P4310. No, by object, you meant Cafe One, which is really a feature. So you do it at the feature level, role level. You say, you know, everybody with this role can publish, create, and modify Cafe Ones.
Yep. Okay. Or they can not modify. Maybe they only have... So this is only for action security for a UDO. So this isn't your view security. Your view security comes elsewhere. This is your, you can take action to create and publish, or create, publish, and modify UDOs. Mm-hmm. So the modification is modifying UDOs that are created by other users. The create and publish allows a user to create a UDO and then, you know, share that UDO that you create with other users by clicking on, I think, the request to publish option in the UDO. So,
all right. So I've gone in, you've given me access to the feature. And now you've given me action security to be able to at least create, publish, potentially modify. We'll keep it there. I go in, I create my Cafe One, and I think it's pretty snazzy. So, you know, I want to save it basically, and I want to use it. Now, in order to do that, I really have to then publish it.
To yourself? No, you don't actually have to publish it for yourself. But if you want to have, let's say somebody else on your team use it, you might want to publish it then. Yes. That's where that publish ability comes in.
Okay. So then I publish it, but they still can't see it because...
No, you have to, you actually have to then... There's another step in there. When you publish it, you actually have to go into the object itself and do some stuff to that object. So, for example, in the security for the object, and I do this at least through P98220U, which is working with user-defined objects. So if I have a Cafe One and I want to publish it, it'll be at a, like a status 7. So then I would need to do a basically an approved share on it. And that would then be one step closer to you being able to see it, or to me. Let's say you created it and you wanted to share it with me, and we have different security roles. The third step would be granting the security for the UDO to my role. And I personally, when I do it in my lower environments, I like to do it through P98220U, again, so working with user-defined objects, where I right-click on it, and then I go under Advanced, and I go to Security. And then on the, there's two tabs on this the screen that opens up, Revise View Security, where I'll put in the role, and then under the View option that's there, I'll toggle the red box to be a green circle.
Okay. So again, obviously, you know, folks cannot see this, but we're trying to explain the overall life cycle. I've created this. I want to publish it so that you can use it. So I do a request to publish. You've got to go in and, or an administrator's got to go in and grant that request to publish. But even then, only the people that have view access for that actually can see it. So then you've got to go in and you can either do that directly through the security workbench to give view access, or you can do it through 98220 to go in and not only share it, but then also grant view access to the roles or individuals that you wish to be able to utilize my Cafe One that I just created.
Correct. Yep. Okay. And let's say you have something like we definitely have some grid formats that we publish to Star Public. So everybody gets that grid format, assuming they have the security to see that application, right? So if you can do stuff to Star Public, we are obviously going to be very limited on what gets applied to Star Public. For our view security. But for the most part, it's nice. There's options to look at it multiple ways. Like if I really want a quick and dirty way of seeing like, hey, what does this specific role have for UDO security? I'm going to go through the security workbench and go in at least to the view and say, oh, okay, here's all the object types or individual UDO objects that they have access to. So there's a quicker and dirty way versus going over to the work with web objects and going object by object to see what kind of security that is. That would be slow. So it's nice that they have, you know, multiple options. And I just think applying the security through OMW web is easier for me for whatever reason. I'm sure it's just the personal
security,
choice.
Right. Yeah. The shared security makes more sense through there because that's where you go to approve a share, right? I mean, if somebody's requested to publish, you want to approve it so that it's shared. While you're right there, you want to then obviously designate who can actually use it. That totally makes sense versus having to go back to security workbench and go through that. But again, trying to make it obviously intuitive and as user-friendly as we can. But as you can tell through this conversation, I mean, it's fairly straightforward, but there's a lot more steps than many would probably think are involved. And we interchange terminology, right? We use object when we talk about an application, but in this case, object means UDO type. And within that application, you see object type as the UDO, and you actually see the application ID. So it gets very confusing, you know, as we switch terminology and, you know, whatnot. But high level, enable the feature, which is enable the usage of the user-defined object type that you want to use, grant either your specific users or roles action security so that they can create, publish, and modify. Your system administrators will go in and approve, and whenever they approve one of these, they can then designate who can actually view it and use it. That's the skinny down life cycle that these have. Now, you know, you and I were chatting earlier because, you know, why wouldn't we be? But in prep, you know, obviously for this episode, you guys do everything by role. What other things do you have to maybe think about when you're setting this up, setting up some of these UDOs as far as what level to do it at and how granular to get? What are some of the considerations, I guess?
I think for us, the challenge is going to be more on some of these more advanced UDOs that I might call them, your orchestrations, where things that are actually, they could be executing business functions, right? So for me, like, well, how do I know that the orchestration is working properly? Or I think for me, what came out was, I think I tried to articulate this as best I could, is basically when you set up security for an orchestration, do you tie that to a specific job role or do you tie it to like a general service user ID? So we're just kind of getting into orchestrations. And as I think forward into all of the different orchestrations that I feel like we could build, given enough time and resources, of course, I don't think I want to tie all of my orchestrations to one service user ID. And for the first couple, we created a service user ID and a corresponding database proxy account so that if there are problems, it's hopefully a little bit easier for my DBA to be able to troubleshoot if it's tied to a service ID. But if we have multiple orchestrations that are running off that service ID, how do I know which or which may not be causing an issue? So I think my question was like, do you just set up one service user ID and a corresponding database proxy account for each orchestration? I'm like, wow, that seems like a lot. That can't be right. You know, do you set up a service user ID orchestration maybe by like a business function? So maybe HR or financials or manufacturing, and then maybe have corresponding database accounts for those. Do you do it by, if you have maybe a third party tool that is running some integrations, do you set up a special one for that? So I actually did pose that question to a couple of my good connections in the community, because I'm like, what are other people that are probably, I think they're more advanced in their orchestrator life than what we are. You know, what are they doing? So trying to get some understanding there and, you know, like, is there actually, I think the question I asked that my developer loved was like, I said, what is the best practice? Is there one? You know, so there isn't a lot out there for guidance on what is the best practice for this. I know there was a presentation done at InFocus last year on this topic. And I actually, Dave Wagoner from Hoffman, who was on our podcast episode earlier, did share with me that PowerPoint and gave me some advice as he was one of the individuals that I had reached out to with this question. So more to come. I have some more diving to do on this and try to get my arms wrapped around it. Because I obviously want to set our company up for success with it, keeping in mind our SOX requirements as well. And then being able to not have to like pivot and redo down the line to be like, right. Probably should have thought a little bit further ahead on this. So,
yeah, I mean, you've gone, I could see one or two levels, people go in one or two levels and they're trying to organize everything by role, by division, by, you know, what have you. You're going to the level of, okay, forget execution. I'm at a troubleshooting level now. At some point, we have to be able to backtrack on these things. We have to be able to understand who's launching what, where, when, why, how best to set this up in a way that's going to actually facilitate you troubleshooting any issues that you do have, which, you know, I think, again, you're looking beyond just how do I enable my business to use this stuff, which good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So continual learning, that's what it's about. And hopefully I can learn from some others that may have already walked this path and pull bits and pieces, because there might not be, you know, what is the best fit. It may be different per organization, and that's okay, you know, but being able to pull from different experiences, again, that's the power of this community, is that there are a lot of people out there that can answer those questions and are willing to do so. And again, it's another one of those things I absolutely love about this community. They help bring one another up.
Yep, for sure.
So, yeah.
All right. Did we miss anything, or did that cover everything that you wanted to cover on Udo security today?
I think that covered it all for today.
All right. Well, before we sign off, we should probably keep with tradition. What is our Midwesternism today? What did you select?
Well, before I get to that, I have a funny story.
Oh, okay.
So at our Blueprint 4D Live episode, we covered a Midwesternism. And lo and behold, yesterday I was on the phone with my father. And my father still lives in Minnesota, of course, and he comments often on the state of the crops in the area. He was driving out to his Wednesday golf league and noticed the corn, of course. And his comment to me was, well, the corn looks like it's doing good. It's taller than your sister. And I laughed because I'm like, that's not the usual phrase that he uses. My sister, mind you, is shorter than me by about 4 inches. So I said, well, the corn must be at least, is definitely, not at least, is definitely knee-high by the 4th of July then. And he said, absolutely it is. So normally around this time of year, it never fails. My father will tell me, it doesn't even matter when I lived in Minnesota even, he would tell me, yep, the corn's knee-high by the 4th of July. I would always get that comment somewhere in there. So I just wanted you to know that it's still an active Midwesternism, at least in my family. I don't know.
Yeah, you're not making this stuff up. It's still, you know, valid, and you saw evidence of it 2 weeks later. That's awesome.
I did. So I thought that was amusing. But for today's Midwesternism, which may or may not entirely be a Midwesternism, but I definitely have heard it a lot, another colloquialism. I said the word successfully.
Easy for you to say.
I know, right?
So this is our category. We're going to stay in here for a few weeks, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. Raining cats and dogs. And I chose that one because, well, I live in Southwest Florida and it is rainy season. And let's just say that it has been raining cats and dogs at times recently. which means raining very heavily. There's not legitimately cats and dogs falling from the sky. Thank goodness. That would be awkward.
No.
But I'd have a lot of fun.
They might be floating. Yeah, I was going to say they might be floating down the street, but.
Well, we hope not, because there's alligators out there.
Oh, gosh. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to go there. So,
I did. Sorry. It's a legit thing down here. I mean, I do have to be on the lookout for them. So.
For sure. All right.
Yep. All right. Well, for questions, feedback, or ideas for future episodes, contact us at the JDE Connection at questoraclecommunity.org. Until next time, let's keep learning, sharing, and most importantly, laughing together. Toodles!
See ya! Thank you for tuning in for today's episode of the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production. Show notes and links can be found at questoraclecommunity.org/JDE Connection.
To learn more about what's happening in the Quest JD Edwards community, visit our website at questoraclecommunity.org/JD Edwards.